Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Bears. My name is Joey Christopoulos, and today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. And look, basketball and hockey playoffs, it's coming into the final round right now. Baseball's marquee matchups are happening every single day, and BetOnline has got prop bets, futures, odds, news, and information for all your online sports betting needs. So what are you waiting for? Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next tip-off, face-off, or pitch, head on over to BetOnline and start playing today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming into the pod. I'm so excited to talk to this guest. He's here today to talk about his book, Trials to Triumph. He's former Chicago Bear, former Florida State Seminole, Freddie Stevenson. Freddie, thank you so much for coming onto the pod. How are you today?
And I'm great. I appreciate you having me on today.
So excited, man. And I think for a lot of people that are about to listen to this pod, I think they're going to get a lot out of this. And maybe if we can just kind of start at the beginning. For a lot of the listeners that might not know a little bit of your story, which is so, you know, inspirational and really incredible, can you kind of just sort of walk through a bit of your background that led into, you know, playing obviously for Florida State and eventually for the Chicago Bears?
To be honest, it's crazy that this story is making waves now, but it's been a crazy journey. And starting off early on, we faced a lot of different obstacles, and having to deal with some of those things that we dealt with is ultimately what drove me to get to this level. I don't know if I would have had the drive that I had if I didn't go through the things that I went through. And early on, my father, we had our trials because he was a drug trafficking and got incarcerated, leaving my mother with the hard task of raising five children on her own. And times got hard. It was crazy. I remember being homeless at times, bouncing around from place to place. Food was hard to come by. My mother working 2 to 3 jobs trying to make ends meet. And it was tough just watching my mom have to go through that. But as a kid, you don't truly know how bad it is. I tell people all the time, they ask me how was things for the kids. Like, man, you're a kid. You're still trying to enjoy life, have fun. Like, of course, you don't have some of the things you would like, but you just want to have fun as a kid. But I remember a day in particular where we're all walking around. It's like 8 o'clock in the evening. And my mother, she's getting everybody together. And my baby sister starts crying because we hadn't eaten all day. And usually by this time, worst case scenario, we're having a piece of bread. Like all of us have our own piece of bread to eat. Worst case scenario. So this day we hadn't eaten. So we're kind of wondering, like, what's going on? And my mother, she just gathers everybody together. She starts walking us down the street. And we come across a McDonald's and we walk inside. My mother goes up to the cash register, orders a cheeseburger. And at this time we're looking around, we're like, okay, it's 5 of us. What are we gonna do with one cheeseburger? And you don't wanna complain, but it's like, all right. We usually all have at least something for ourselves individually. And at the time we didn't know that my mom, she only had a dollar to her name. So when the clerk comes over, the cashier, she tells us the total, and it comes out to $1.05. And later on, when we get into the social media handle, you'll learn the significance behind my story when you hear this, but it comes out to $1.05. And my mom, she talks to the cashier. She's like, okay, I only have a dollar, ma'am. Please with it. So I only have a dollar. Is it okay if I give you this dollar? I don't have the nickel. Can I get the cheeseburger? And for some reason that day, the lady behind the register, she was being a little difficult. I don't know if she was having a bad day or if her boss was just being hard on her. She's like, no, I can't allow you to do that. So my mom, we watched her have to go around McDonald's and beg for a nickel. And at this time, it's like, okay, this is crazy. We didn't know. We had no clue. And after getting the burger, we're like all embarrassed. My mom walks us outside and she starts slicing it up into 5 pieces. And she starts handing it out to everybody. And as we're eating, my big sister notices that my mom isn't eating. And she looks at her and she asks her why she wasn't eating with us. And we all start looking at each other and we start offering her some of our burger. And my mom turns it down and just bursts into tears. And that was the moment, that was my it moment. When you think about my whole entire career, everything that I've been through, that's the it moment that whenever I wanted to give up, that's what I thought back to keep pushing.
It's an incredible story. You know, your mom gets a game ball every day for the rest of her life. I hope you know that. You know, my question is, you know, and I do want to get into the impetus for Trials of Triumph, which we're getting into right now. So for you personally, when you were growing up, was sports for you an escape, or did sports sometimes fuel some of the things that you were experiencing and feeling at that time?
I think it was a bit of both, to be honest. Just an escape from everything that we were dealing with. And yeah, it just fueled a lot. I remember running around the house, and in our environment, you have to find something to push towards, or you're going to get stuck in the shuffle. A lot of people don't make it out because they get stuck in the shuffle. And for me, it was that football. I used to always run around with the football in the park. I'm that guy with the football. So my mom, she put me into sports early. And I remember early on, like she probably didn't take me seriously, but I remember promising her that I was gonna make it to the NFL. And she's like, yeah, I know, like kind of rough. I don't know if she believed it or not, but I was dead serious. I'm a young kid, but I was dead serious. And I was adamant on living up to that promise.
You know, my question for you is, can you walk us through a little bit of that moment when, you know, you're playing football in high school? Did you get a phone call? Was it a letter? How did you find out that you had gotten into Florida State? Can you kind of maybe walk us through that story a little bit, and maybe a little bit about what your mom's reaction was like, you know, when she found out that her son was going to not just a big time college, but also going to a school that eventually was going to become a national champion?
Yeah, without a doubt. It was my whole entire recruiting process was crazy when I look back at it, because everybody thinks, when they look at my background, like, oh, you're a top 250 player in the country, they think I was just this highly touted player my whole entire career, but that's not the case. My junior season, I had no schools looking at me, and I broke my leg. I had an injury that doctors told me that was career-ending. I broke my fibula, broke my ankle, lost all the cartilage in my ankle, broke a few bones in my foot, and I remember going back and forth with the doctors. They were telling me that my career was over. I just had to focus on being able to walk again. And I'm like, man, it gets heated in there. It gets tense. Like, man, I made a promise to my mom. I haven't fulfilled that promise. I'm going to make it to the league. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And they had to calm me down. And I remember being bedbound for like 4 to 5 months. I'm homeschooled. Teachers are coming to the house to make sure that I get all my lessons and things like that, or I would have had to drop out of school. And it was discouraging for me at the time because schools were still like kind of hesitant. Nobody was really reaching out. And then I remember it like it was yesterday, like 3 months after my surgery, UMass calls. And they're like, man, we saw the injury. We think you're a hell of a player and we want to offer you a scholarship. And they were invested in me. They're like, man, if you have to come in here and sit out a year, we're willing to invest in your rehabilitation process, because we think you have opportunity to change this program. So Florida State was not even on my mind at the time. I'm just thinking about getting an opportunity to play in college. So when UMass called, I'm like, man, I don't care if another school calls. I got an opportunity to chase my dream. And I remember crying out tears of joy, because during that time, it got dark for me. My goals, they were in jeopardy. I didn't know if I was going to be able to accomplish them, but I didn't know what was to come. Like, every single day after that UMass call, schools were blowing my phone up.
Nice.
Blowing my phone up. So I wasn't expecting that. I'm thinking at this point, like, you think you grow up thinking you're a Division I caliber player, but as I'm going through the process, you kind of have those doubts. Like, am I that good? And once they started calling, I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Like,
yeah, it's like when you go to the dance and just one girl dances with you, and now all the other girls are all of a sudden like, well, wait, what's going on? This he's got some moves. This looks good. Like,
it's crazy. And then later in that week, I believe the school that set everything off as far as like Power Five Division I schools was West Virginia. West Virginia offered, I believe, 2 days after UMass, and it absolutely went crazy. Crazy. Everybody's blowing my phone up. And remember, I'm still at the house. I can't leave the house. So when I go back to school, it's a whole different level for me as far as recruitment, because schools can actually, you know, they want to see you in person, see if you actually, people lie on these recruiting sites all the time, say a guy's 6'4", he's really 6'1". So when I get in the school and I'm actually able to meet with these teams face-to-face, They're like, all right, we want him. He's actually
6'4". Bad. He's 6'4". So, yeah.
It was crazy because I remember schools that were offering me early on, they were coming to see me, and these were schools that I was high on because I didn't think about these other big schools. They didn't start really offering until I get back into school. And those schools come in, the original schools, and they see that Florida State's, I remember it was that Florida State, I believe Georgia, Ole Miss, and Kentucky, I believe, were all there at the school. And some of the original schools come in, they're like, yeah, we're not getting him. We're not getting him. And I remember I couldn't play spring that season. And FIU was a school that was one of my earlier offers. And one of my boys, he was over there. And I overheard the conversation. I'm just walking around, kind of observing practice. I overheard the conversation. And this is right after Florida State offers. He's like, man, he just got offered by Florida State this week. And this is my best friend. They don't know it's my best friend, but he's on the sideline with him. He's like, he just got offered by Florida State this week. He's like, yeah, he did. He's like, the guy literally walked off the field. He's like, man, I'm going home. I'm going home. I'm going home. And when you think about Florida State, I wasn't a Florida State fan growing up. I was a Miami guy. My dad's a Miami fan, and that's all we lived and breathed. But I remember going through the recruitment process, Miami, Florida, a few of the Florida schools, they were scared off by my injury. And I played the whole process. Even though I'm a Miami fan, I wanted to go there. I treated it like a business. My ultimate goal was to get to the league. So I remember going to Miami for a visit. They're saying how high they are on me. And this is the time where I'm still on crutches. And I believe right before the Miami visit, they cleared me to walk in the booth. And I told my dad, I was like, man, Pops, I'm going to play this smart to see how bad they want me. And I remember telling him, I'm like, man, I'm going to take my crutches up there. And at this time, I'm walking and everything. I'm taking my crutches up there, and I'm going to see how bad they want me. And I get up to the visit, and they had me crutching around. They got all these carts, and they got me crutching around. I'm like, man, I don't care. I'm not going to that school. I'm not going. And I remember they kind of held off. They were trying to play the wait-and-see game.
Yeah.
And down the line, I commit to Florida State. And Miami and all these other guys later in the year, once my senior tape came out, they come back. Like, man, do you still want to come here? I know this is your dream school. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. Like, we'll have fun beating y'all next year. Yeah.
<It's all good. laughs> Really well played. I'll tell you that much. I got a couple more questions. I want to ask you about the book, and then maybe we can go and do a little bit of Smile on the Field stuff. I want to ask you some stuff about the Chicago Bears. I do want to talk about your book a little bit more, Trials to Triumph. Talk a little bit about, you know, I think a lot of people always ask, like, why did you write the book? I think that's a bit self-explanatory. My question for you is, someone gets your book, they read it, they read that final page, that final paragraph, they shut the book, they close it. What do you want the reader to get out of, you know, Trials to Triumph? You know, what would be your dream scenario for that reader to get out of your book?
Yeah, without a doubt. It's crazy you asked me that. Like you said, everybody's asked me why I wrote the book. And initially, it was really to help athletes out that were going through that transition, just trying to figure things out at the ball. But it's crazy how life works sometimes. This COVID deal, it made my book, like my book released 2 years ago, and I'm just now dropping the ebook. And I was telling people, I've been telling people, like, man, like a year and a half after my book releases, it goes crazy. Like, it wasn't really doing that well when I first started. But so many things that are going on in the world, like, people just started resonating to the book. They gravitate towards the book and resonate with the story. And I believe it's more relevant now than ever. So many people going through trials, tribulations with COVID. People have been losing jobs, trying to figure things out. And I think a lot of people have been doing a lot of soul searching throughout this time. Some people may be going through depression, whatever the case may be. And I've dealt with all of that throughout my journey. After transitioning after ball, I was depressed, didn't really know who I was. My whole entire identity was wrapped up into sports. And I didn't know who Freddie Stevenson was outside of the game. And I was depressed, going through suicidal thoughts, like, man, if I'm not playing the game, why am I even here? And I remember just going through a phase where I go back to a lifestyle. I go back to living a street lifestyle just to try to make ends meet. And I'm kind of mad at the world. I'm mad at the world, living reckless. And when you get into times like that, a person that's always struggled, but now I'm a grown man. I got to make ends meet. So it was tough for me. And I know even while I'm going through this journey, I knew that it wasn't my purpose. And ultimately, I had to do a lot of soul searching throughout that time. So people that read this book, I think it's going to be a challenge to them. And I've had people come back to me that haven't even, they don't like sports. And this is when I knew, my biggest purpose was to impact athletes, like when I initially wrote the book. But when people started coming back to me, like, man, a guy reached out to me, I believe about 5-6 months ago. He's like, man, you don't know how much you helped me. I don't play sports, never played sports, don't follow sports. Like, I came across your book. I saw it on the internet one day, and then I bought it. He's like, man, you saved me from taking my life. And he was telling me he was going through a lot of things with COVID and things of that nature, lost his job, put his marriage in jeopardy. And he said, my book helped him out a little bit in his marriage. And it was a blessing to absolutely hear that. Like, it was an absolute blessing. And just to hear him reach out and say that I made an impact, and now he's able to find clarity, find his ultimate purpose, dig deeper and find out what he truly wants out of this life because of my book. That's the ultimate accomplishment I want from this book. People to read this book and they feel like, okay, after reading that story, I know, all right, despite everything that I'm going through, there's a higher level that I can reach. There's more that I will achieve with this life. Just looking themselves in the mirror and knowing that no matter what I go through, you can't stop me. I'm gonna win. That's why it's called Trials of Triumph.
That's so cool, man. You know, I'm rooting for you, right? I want you to sell a million books. But also when you say stuff like that, I also like had this simplistic moment of like, fuck book sales, because dude, you just helped. If you help that one dude, right, kind of get through a hard time through your story and your written word, kind of worth it, right? And so the question I kind of wanted to ask you was, and look, it gets a little difficult, right? We're like, I don't want this to be like perceived as comparative, right? Because you have your story. And I think that some people, as you mentioned, like over this last year and a half has been really difficult for a lot of people. And they've been struggling with things, whether they are mental, financial, their relationships with, you know, whatever, family members, relationship with friends, people that have had to like live alone during this time. So instead of it being we're all comparing like how tough all of our stories are, I think a lot of us have had to go through a particular type of struggle to get to a perseverance. And you seem to be at a great place right now. So what do you have any principles? Do you have like a mantra these days, like on your daily, that you're kind of maybe trying to remind yourself, try and tell yourself, that maybe, you know, some of the listeners listening to this right now, trying to get through that transition, working through it right now, that you can maybe impart upon them that's working for you right now?
It's ultimately every single day is trust the process. It's trust it. You may not understand it now. Sometimes I have to like talk to myself, like, man, listen, Freddie, you think about what you accomplished to this point. I had to talk with myself, and that's ultimately what got me out of that struggle. Sometimes in life we'll get through so much, and some of the things we've been through in the past will be far worse than the things we're going through at this current time, and we'll allow that to kind of overcome us a bit. So you have to sometimes sit down and remind yourself like how strong you are. You've overcome so much. You're a warrior. When I was homeless, when I was going through my injury, all these different battles that we had to overcome, none of this, like, we were just continuing to stay focused on the goal and just trusting that things were going to happen. But I got to a place that somehow I lost sight of that. And I had to remind myself ultimately, like, man, you're a champion. And not just on the football field, we had an opportunity to win the championship at Florida State. But I believe that the way that I've been able to overcome things in my life, it ultimately correlated with the fact that I was able to go on and win a championship. When I went to Florida State, it was a lot of guys that had been through a lot of similar situations. And I just want people to know throughout life, you just got to trust it. There'll be some things you may not understand. And there's some things even to this day I won't understand, but I've been able to build confidence and just speak positive thoughts even during dark times. You're not going to understand it. But a lot of these things that we go through, they're to build character. They're to build strength. They're to prepare you for what's next in life. And every single time in my life that I've questioned something or I've had my back against the wall, those are the times that I got my biggest breakthrough. So now it's like, man, just trust it. And instead of worrying about why I'm going through this, it's okay. Now, instead of asking why am I going through this and feeling bad for myself, it's like, why am I going through this? What do I need to learn? How can I grow from this? How can it prepare me for what's next? So ultimately, staying grounded and enjoying the journey. That's really what it is. Enjoying your journey and trusting your process. And ultimately, you'll in the end, knowing that you'll be all right.
Yeah, well, and the funny part about it, too, is when people always, like, look back on stuff, you know, I put in the work, you know what I mean? And when you're not, when you're putting in the work in the moment, I don't think you realize that, like, that's the stuff that leads to the really good stuff. And I try and simplify. You put on the NFL uniform. You know what I'm saying? Like, you did it, you know? And when you go through hard times, I always try and think that they're just trying to prepare you for the opportunity of success. And you want to be ready for success, because when it knocks on your door, you want to open up and be ready to roll. So when things aren't going well, I always try and sort of feel like those things are preparing me for that moment, because when that happens, I want it to work out for me as best I can, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's a quote out there that I love, and it's absolutely spot on what you just said. It's like, I believe it's so many people want to skip the process, but not knowing that when you skip classes, you miss lessons.
Yeah, that's good.
You have to go through some things, and you have to embrace those challenges. If this is truly what you want, you have to embrace that challenge that's going to come with it.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our brand new sponsor, Moinkbox.com. Moink was founded by an 8th-generation farmer who was featured on Shark Tank. Host Kevin O'Leary at the time said it was the best bacon he'd ever tasted. And you know what? I tasted it too, and I agree. Question number one for you. Why do just 4 companies control 80% of the U.S. meat industry? Because big food crushes the little guy. You can help change that with Moinkbox.com. Question two. Why are 97% of chickens served in the U.S. dipped in chlorine? Simple, because big food doesn't have the same quality standards as the family farm. That's why you need Moinkbox.com. And finally, the best bacon, the best steak, the best chicken, and best salmon you'll ever eat won't come from the grocery store. You will only find it on the family farm caught by independent Alaskan fishermen. That's why you need Moinkbox.com. So what are you waiting for? Join the Moink movement today. Go to Moinkbox.com/believe, B-L-E-A-V, right now. And listeners to the show get free bacon for an entire year with every box ordered. I'm going to repeat that. Free bacon for a year with every box ordered. That's 1 year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but only for a limited time, so you have to act now. That's right. Go to moinkbox.com, moinkbox.com/believe, B-L-E-A-V. That's moinkbox.com/believe, and get free bacon for a year. Now, back to the pod. If it's cool, we're going to transition over a little bit to talk about some, I just want to get some perspectives on some on-the-field stuff for you. Let's just go back to Florida State real quick. Can you tell me maybe one or two things? Now, look, I played sports in junior high and high school, but I've been on some teams. I've been on some shitty teams. I've been on some good teams. And sometimes you kind of sort of get an idea of that little hint of when you're on a good team. So obviously you guys went to the national title game with Florida State. Were there a couple of things maybe on the field or even off the field intangible wise that you picked up early on that said, you know what, man, like this team, there's something about us that I can't maybe put my finger on, but I feel like we're a successful team. Did you get that vibe, and what was that?
Yeah, I got the vibe early on when I was in fall camp. It was just a feeling, and part of you don't truly know, but it's like that it moment. I don't know. Like, I can't say we knew we were going to win the national championship, but it's just like, man, you know this team has a chance. And I believe it was in fall camp one day, and just seeing how everybody approached the game. But this was, I think we had one of those practices, and everybody, I think it's a 2-a-day. We come out for the second practice at night. Everybody is out there like, man, I just want to like go home. And then a fight breaks out, a huge fight breaks out. And between two guys, a little brawl happens. And then after that practice, I mean, after that fight, everything just comes together. And I promise you, like, throughout all our practices, that may have been the best practice we ever had while I was at Florida State. Everybody's firing on all cylinders. And when you think about it, that 2013 national championship team, all that NFL talent that was on that squad, like, I tell anybody, like, man, listen, that practice right there, everybody was on somebody's highlight tape. It was back and forth. It was like a heavyweight fight those old school heavyweight fights, and everybody wanted more. Like, they ended up running like, I think it was one of those practices where you're tight for time. The second practice is a little tight for time, but it's like, nah, man, guys kept wanting to keep going. And I think back to another situation when I enrolled early in spring, and a lot of guys still aren't there yet. They come in the fall. But I remember a scrimmage where we're in full pads, scrimmage where we're on the goal line at the end of the scrimmage. This is the last part of the scrimmage. And I believe we ran like, 25 to 30 straight plays on the goal line. You only supposed to run like 3 to 4. And they just kept the ones in there the whole time.
Oh, my God.
They just kept lining it up. And I'm like, dang. And I'm coming in. I'm a two. I'm trying to get on the field. But the guy's like, man, nah. Nobody on the offensive side wanted to leave. Nobody on the defensive side wanted to leave. I remember our running back, James Wilder, he has broken ribs. We didn't know it until the next day. He cracked his rib, but he kept going. And just that moment, I was like, man, we may have something special. But I didn't really know for real until we got into fall camp. And once that moment happened in fall camp, like, we're going to have the opportunity to do something special. And when you're on teams like that, you just don't want to let – you don't want to let them down. Me coming in as a freshman, all these guys that hold each other to the highest standards, you don't want to be that guy that messes it up. So you got younger guys now that they may not understand it, but they know they're not going to get cussed out by this older guy right here. So it's everybody holding each other to the highest standards. And I believe ultimately guys from the second level, third level, like I tell you, it was anybody can get a team. We got the guys that are on the twos, guys on the threes, embarrassing guys on the ones. So when they get out there on Saturdays, like, man, these young cats on our team right now are better than these guys were playing. We were hungry. And I ultimately believe the reason we were able to win a championship is a lot of that, it was trials and triumphs. To be honest, a lot of guys on that team had been through so much and they were hungry. And we had the right group of people to connect with each other. And those battles ultimately brought us closer. I tell anybody all the time, in 2014, those teams after 2015, 2016, the rest of my years at Florida State, I knew that we didn't have the squad that we had in 2013. And honestly, the 2014 team was more talented than the 2013 team. But you knew right away, like, man, something missing from the squad. Like, you just know. And it was hard trying to implement that within the team and try to get guys to understand, but it just wasn't there. Teams that have it, they have it, and you know when they have it.
That's the beauty of sports, man. It's ethereal. It's intangible. I'm so happy that you told that type of story, because maybe you do feel it in that moment, but now, like, when you look back, you're like, oh, man, that right there, like, that's the shit that made us, that set us apart. Mm-hmm. And when you get into it, and look, like, you're on some teams, and I don't want to get this wrong for people that maybe – don't play a lot of sports or whatever. You're still going out there and you're trying your hardest. You think you can win every single game. You think you can win on every single play, every single down, no matter what it is. But, yeah, as you mentioned, it's just sometimes it's the little stuff that you can't quite put your finger on. And I think what you're talking about is that the threes, twos, and ones, you know, the threes weren't maybe just trying to play a role. I mean, they were trying to compete just as hard as those ones were. And it raised all the boats, right? It just raised all the boats, and maybe it made playing football on Saturdays a little bit easier.
Without a doubt. And I think when you look at these great teams, they do the little things, the small things exceptionally. And when I go and look at the other years where I was there, we didn't necessarily have the same level of success. Guys, they did all the big things great, but it was the small things they couldn't do. The fundamentals, they couldn't execute those things. And those are ultimately, when you get down to it late in the season, that's what wins you games. It's blocking and tackling. And the most simplest things guys weren't willing to do. And just having that commitment early on in that 2013 season and having the young guys commit to that process, I think that's what separated us.
Talk a little bit about your experience playing for the Chicago Bears. You know, just going to camp, putting on the jersey, having the C across your helmet, and, you know, I believe it was 2017, correct? So that's with John Fox, correct?
Yep, John Fox. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a cool experience. I come in and I'm a guy. I came in early with a mindset that kind of shocked people. A lot of rookies are just trying to find their way, and I don't know if it's going through what I went through or just playing at Florida State. I really believe that it prepared us for the league, but they didn't expect me. I know they didn't, to come in that early and make an impact like that. But my mindset, well, I believe early on, even being a rookie, oh, man, I'm a Pro Bowl caliber player. I'm an All-Pro type player. And I'm coming in with that mindset. But I think it was a great experience. And a thing that shocked me a little bit about the league was, I know the rules have changed, but how much free time we had. Like, man, it's crazy. Like, we get done with practice and we got all this free time. Like, in college after this, like, we would have tutoring, this, that, the third. Like, you don't really know what to do with all this free time. It feels like a whole new day when you're in the league, because in college, you had to do so much. But it was definitely a great experience. I think one thing that kind of shocked me about the league is just the political side of it. But I know a lot of guys have to deal with that, and it was definitely weird for me.
So I'm going to ask you a nerdy question, not to derail this too much. Do you remember, did you cross paths with Cameron Lee, offensive lineman? He was in camp that year, 2017.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so long story short, he's a former co-host of mine. He used to co-host Believe in Bears. We did the entire season last year together, and he was on the team 16-17, and actually I think eventually got into a game towards the end of the year. He was on those Fox teams. And not to blow up a spot or anything, and we don't have to get into names or specifics, but he also talked about how there's an underlying story going on in an NFL football locker room about how coaches kind of have their guys, right? Like, they get hired to bring in certain dudes, or they recruit certain guys, or maybe they were in the room when they made the sixth round pick on so-and-so. And as much as, like, the NFL talks about it being a meritocracy, it isn't always like that on the political side. Am I wrong saying that sometimes maybe other guys, it isn't just a straight talent competition? You know, sometimes certain coaches kind of like certain guys maybe a little bit more.
I tell people all the time, they try to, like, a lot of guys, we've dealt with it. I tell them, I'm like, man, listen, ultimately, NFL, it is what it is. Guys are talented, but it's no different than your normal working class job. You have got people that they get opportunities that they may not necessarily be deserving of. And that was weird for me, especially in this game. Like, man, listen. You sit back and like, do they want to win? Like, do they truly want to win? And I think ultimately for some of these guys, they have relationships outside of the game. So this guy may have a relationship with this guy's agent, so he may be protecting this guy a little bit.
Or and, the coach went to some school, yeah, and the guy's the alma mater from there. And then as a fan, we're watching the games, and then week 8, week 9, maybe a guy gets an opportunity. And we do the whole thing. Well, where the hell has this guy been the whole time?
That's why the whole I hate when announcers say, "Oh, this guy's fresh off the couch." Oh, man, I could find you 10 guys right now that are better than the guys starting on the roster. I could find you that right now, and I hate it, because there's so many guys that get screwed over in this system just because of these reasons. But it comes with it, and it like you said. I kind of knew that was what was taking place in my situation early on. And I'm a guy that I play running back. I play H-back. I was a guy that did a lot. So I'm not really worried about it. It just bothered me when we're getting in the preseason game, because I'm playing all these things in practices. Like, we had a whole bunch of backs go down in camp, and they didn't sign backs because they knew what I could do with the ball in my hands. So that was a testament to what I could do. They gave me opportunity. And I remember going into games, and I felt like they were limiting my opportunities. I remember being on a 2-minute drill, and they're having me in on all the pass protection plays, and they started taking me out. It's 2 minutes before the half. So anybody, you know the game, 2 minutes before the half, you can mix in a few runs.
Sure.
So they got me in on a few pass protection plays, and they take me out, bring another back in. And this is getting towards the end of training camp. So I was like, all right, this is cuts are starting to happen. They're taking me out when we run the ball. Like, yo, like, what's going on? Like, and I kind of had a feeling what was taking place. Like, man, they're not trying to get me any film running the ball, because that'll give me an edge. Like, anybody that knows the game, practice and the game are two different things. You can kill a guy in practice, but ultimately, if he's getting more opportunities in the game, who's going to win that battle? So I think that's what happened with me. But I was, to be honest with you, when I left, I thought that with everything that went down, I was like, man, I'm going to get signed tomorrow. But going through that process, it was weird for me because a lot of teams were scared off. I remember teams reaching out to my agent and people in my camp asking if I had character issues. And it was definitely weird for me. I remember workouts, like thinking, I'm telling my family, like, man, they're going to sign me. I killed this workout. I'll be good. I'm probably going to be on this team, so y'all get ready. And I go back to meet up with the team. They're asking me about things that went on there. I don't know if they're trying to set me up to talk bad about a guy or what, because I know these situations that happen, like you go back to the combine, they're just trying to test you. Oh, man, I'm not going to talk bad about them. This is a new opportunity. Like, I'm not worried about that. But it was like, they're like, what happened with this battle? We thought you would have won this battle. And it just wasn't meant to be. And they're pulling up the film. I'm doing my job in the film. So it was definitely weird. But one thing I will say for guys that are dealing with these political situations, training camp is coming up soon. You can't, like, sometimes some things are outside of your control. But ultimately, when you're that guy, you're fighting for opportunity, you're fighting for a shot, because there are a lot of guys that weren't supposed to make it in this league, and they did. But it's, you can't make a mistake. And when I look back at my story, I remember a game in the preseason against the Titans. They gave me a carry, and I can send you the clip.
Oh, please.
They gave me a carry, a fullback dive, and I broke a few tackles. It was a great run, and I get the first down, but I reached out for it, and my knee was down, but bodies were covering it up. A guy pokes it out, so they call a fumble on the field. And I knew when I went to the sideline, I was like, man, they've been kind of trying to limit my opportunities. I feel like this is all they were looking for, to cut me. And so the guys out there that you're going through this training camp battle, it's not to put any pressure on you, but you got to be perfect.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to come into the league. And look, I've heard other stories too of, speaking of what you're talking about, a team will maybe tank a recommendation on a guy because they like the guy and they don't want him to go to a certain team. But by the time that they get their roster, they don't have a spot for him. So they're kind of screwing over the guy. And also I hear stories, too, of we see coaching changes all the time in the NFL. If you're a guy that's trying to get some run and try and get some snaps, all it takes is maybe for a coaching change and a scheme change, and maybe all of a sudden your skill set doesn't exactly fit into, you know, maybe what the team's trying to do. And it's not the player's fault. It's just kind of what sort of happens. And sometimes I think a lot of fans take for granted, you know, the right place, the right time, that definitely kind of exists in the NFL for a lot of guys.
Every single time. You see, So many players, if they can be the greatest player in the world, but if they go in the right system, and it can actually, the wrong system, it can absolutely break them and kill their career.
Yep.
How many guys have we seen over the years that we thought were going to be stars, but like, man, this organization failed this guy?
Or the other side, why does Le'Veon Bell suck all of a sudden? You know what I mean? Well, he probably still just as talented as he was, but if you saw him in Pittsburgh, they were running him out of the slot. They were giving him a ton of carries. He was getting into a rhythm, so on and so forth. You know, so you never know how that new fit is always going to work, despite maybe the talent in the player.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think Le'Veon's situation, I think it may be a situation where he's realizing, talented guy, but I think he's realizing now that the grass isn't greener on the other side. It's because, yeah, he's a talented guy, but like you said, now people are questioning if he's still good, and I've seen him, and he's still the same Le'Veon, in great shape. But sometimes you come into these systems, and your opportunities may be limited because now you've built a reputation for being a bad locker room guy. So one bad situation at this new team, and now your opportunities are limited. So I think it may be a situation where he may have hurt himself a little bit, and a team is going to bring him in, and it's like the Leonard Fournette situation with the Bucks last year. Shut up and prove yourself. And Leonard Fournette did that. That's what situation Le'Veon Bell is going to have to be in to be successful.
And just, you know, throwing out, you know, Kenyon Drake, you know what I mean? Great situation in Arizona. Does he get that same type of run in Oakland with Josh Jacobs? You know, on and on and on. My wife's a Steelers fan, so a hardcore Steelers fan. So hearing you say that about Lev Bell, and I always thought AB, they should just, they had it set. They had it all figured out there. You know what I mean? They should have just rolled with it. So what's your vibe on, let's talk about the fullback for a second. In some cases, I think you could probably say across the board, it's kind of like rock and roll. It's not very in vogue right now, but The fullback always has had its place. I grew up, you know, loving the fullback. You know, I mean, beyond just a Mike Allstott or whatever, I just thought it was an integral part of the game. And you see it with, like, teams like the Ravens and the 49ers. They use the fullback position very successfully. Where do you think the fullback position is right now in the NFL? And do you really think it – do you think it'll, you know, make a comeback at some point?
I think it's not where it needs to be, but it's a combination of two different things. You don't have guys that can play the position to the level that is expected because of the fact that fullback isn't looked at how it used to be looked at, so guys aren't getting those reps in. But also, a lot of these coaches, and you even find the old-school coaches doing it sometimes, they're not committing to a fullback. And that's why I like teams like the Ravens, the 49ers. They committed to a fullback. They committed to having one there, and they got two of the best in the league. You got Ricard is probably
– Juszczyk still, right? Isn't he the other guy too?
Yeah, he's 49ers. He's arguably the best in the league. I think he's the best. Then you got Ricard. He's one of the best, and he's a bigger guy. But those are guys that really, really do their thing. Shout out to Sherman as well. Anthony Sherman for the Chiefs. He does a lot of dirty work. I feel like he's been they don't give him much flowers. That's a guy I've been watching for a while, and he's been doing it for a while. The fullback position, when you got a good one, and you got to keep him. I don't care if the position has phased out or not. When you got a good fullback, you keep him because you see what it does for teams like that, like the Ravens, the 49ers. When they have a true great fullback, it does wonders for your offense. I know a lot of teams try to implement tight ends into that role, but a lot of them aren't used to it, and they really truly don't want to commit to that role. So when you got a fullback that's willing to do that dirty work, can provide in the passing game and on special teams, you commit with them, you commit to them, and you find a place for them.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I'm so glad that you did because, yeah, you see a lot of heavy tight end sets now. You know, you see teams trying to do the two tight end thing. The Chicago Bears, I think, with Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet, I think are kind of in that mold a little bit. But in my opinion, yeah, I kind of miss the Jason McKee, you know what I mean, breaking up that interior seam and getting things going. And I think, you know, for Bears fans, are like, we get off the bus running the football. I think the fullbacks in the offense have been kind of integral in that in previous years. And I understand that the NFL is moving more towards a modern game. But the fullback position, I always just found to be really fun because you can always run him in a flat. You know, he can always block interior. But with the tight end, yeah, just expand a little bit more on because it just seems like you either have a tight end who's a pass-catching tight end or a blocking tight end, and it's kind of hard to find guys that like doing both.
Yeah, and even when you got a blocking tight end and you try to put him in the fullback role, a lot of people, they don't understand how tough fullback is until they have to do it. Like, man, this position is tougher than I thought it was. So it's definitely tough, and to get a guy that's fully committed, that's why you see these guys that they're blocking tight ends or whatever, and then they get in there and they're not really laying the hammer or they're not creating openings for the back. A lot of guys aren't willing to commit to that role. It's a whole different monster. That's why fullbacks are a different breed. When you think about a fullback, you're thinking about a Mike Tyson heavyweight fighter. Every single down, you got to bring that hammer. That's what it is. You have to have the mentality that I'm going to knock this guy out. I'm going to act like that's your mentality as a fullback. Even, and you're going to get caught sometimes, but you're going to have to get up and throw another uppercut. And that's a fullback's mentality. And a lot of guys aren't willing to commit to that. And in today's game, you also have to be able to move in space. And it's a little weird for guys that aren't used to that. Because coming into that role, like you look at it, Juszczyk, they do a lot of different things with Juszczyk in that 49ers offense. Option and sweeps, and he's out there cutting guys down in space. And a lot of tight ends, they get in and they're not really used to that. They're more so, you see tight ends get in at the fullback role and they're just really trying to get in the way.
Yeah, the Bears ran J.P. Holtz, I think, at fullback at one point. Not last year, but the year previous, just because they were throwing the kitchen sink at the offense, just trying to figure out ways, yeah.
That's why even if you don't have that guy on the roster, you have to find a guy that played the position before, was decent in college, even if it's a rookie. You guys, we're going to take this guy under our wing. He's not there yet, but we're going to mold him into that role. And when you look at a lot of the great fullbacks over time, you go back and look at some of these guys back in the day, in the early 2000s, these guys had opportunity to be on teams where it was multiple fullbacks. So oftentimes the guy that was younger went on to be the greater fullback because he had time to learn and really master the position. So I think a lot of the times these coaches, they need to commit to having one on the team, and even if you're hiding them on the practice squad, just to get him those extra reps, because the position is valuable. And you see it, you saw it a lot when Belichick and Brady were making their run in New England. And I'm surprised more teams didn't copy it after that, because when you got into those playoffs, you saw how they were able to dominate and dictate things with the running game and that fullback.
I'm right there with you. I'm surprised that it isn't utilized more in the NFL, and you see the teams that do utilize it, and they're successful. So I that's the part that I don't quite understand. And obviously, just like everything in sports, it kind of goes in trends and cycles, and we'll see what happens from there. I got two more for you. Freddie Stevenson here on Believe in Bears, also talking about his book Trials and Triumph. Two questions I have for you. The first one is, I just want to get your take on the Chicago Bears heading into this season. You know, we have a defense that has a lot of, you know, known commodities on it, maybe a year older on the calendar than they were, you know, obviously the previous year. Your take on that defense, and if you could sit down with the Chicago Bears fan right now, who's obviously just drooling at the mouth to see Justin Fields, you know, out there week one against the Rams on Sunday Night Football, you know, what's your take on what your advice would be for the development of Justin Fields and your overall take on the Bears in 2021?
Okay, yeah, I'm especially with things that are going on in your division, I'm excited about the Bears this year. You got the Packers, they were running the division for years, and Aaron Rodgers isn't there. So it leaves the door wide open for the division. And looking at this Bears roster, they brought in a lot, and they have a lot coming back. I like the addition of Marquise Goodwin. I like bringing in Trufant, the seasoned guy. Then you got Eddie Jackson coming back. But guys, don't forget, Eddie Goldman sat out all last season.
Yeah, dude.
He's coming back. So putting him alongside Akeem Hicks is huge. And one of my favorite signings, just being there, being around this guy, having played with him in college, and just seeing how the Bears organization loves him, bringing Christian Jones back.
Oh, hell yeah.
I love that signing. And I know they hated to have him leave out of there. So for them to bring him back, I think that's huge. But like everything, man, it's all dictated off the quarterback play. And last few years, that's where the Bears have struggled with it. And I think Justin Fields, there's reason to be excited about him. Go back and look at that Clemson tape. There's reason to be his ceiling is a very high ceiling.
Yeah, dude.
I just think it's about not rushing him out there too early. You have a guy, Andy Dalton, that's had success in this league. So you know Justin Fields is your guy, and he'll take this offense to completely different levels. And I do believe he's the guy for this offense to go to that next level. But just ultimately having him learn as much as he can, and once you feel like he's ready, roll him out there. But don't feel a need to rush him out there, because Andy Dalton can lead you to wins, but Justin Fields will lead you to championships.
Quick follow-up on that, because you played the game at the highest level. I've been having this conversation with a lot of guys, and you know, you don't want to rush Justin Fields. You want to have him, in theory, you want to give him that full week of practice and prep and install and walk in, you know, on that first drive, maybe with the first 15 and get going and you know, start his career that way. If Andy Dalton comes out in week two and throws, what, two, three interceptions in the first half, let's say, but the Bears are still in the game, they're only down by a touchdown, but Andy's playing terrible, are you the kind of guy that would throw Justin Fields out there like in like a dirty inning, you know what I mean, bringing a reliever in with the bases loaded? Or would you maybe try and prefer to give him that kind of clean slate starting fresh whenever he does start his career with the Bears?
I think it just depends on where Justin Fields is at. If we see early on that he's our guy and he's ready, then roll him out there. But if we still have a few questions, I think you can absolutely cripple a guy for a lot of his career if you throw him out there too early. Yeah. It'll absolutely kill their mindset and kill everything about them. They're going to question and everything. So if he's ready, roll him out there. But if you have questions about it, shoot, we may just have to get – and you hate to say this as a team because you want to win, but we may have to run the time off this clock and just keep the ball out of our quarterback's hands and try to win this game with defense, because we do not want to kill our quarterback spirit too early.
Well, I will tell you, there will be 400 million Bears fans that will know exactly when Justin Fields is ready, right? And they'll be yelling it from the stands the whole time. Freddie, before we get you out of here, man, I just want you to talk about your clothing line, dude. I just think it's such a cool artistic endeavor on your part, Triumph 105 clothing line. Just tell the good people about it and, you know, maybe a little bit about the style, maybe one of your favorite pieces of clothing and where they can find it.
We got our favorite shirt on right now. It's a culture shirt, the lion.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the motivation behind it, to be honest, the same thing with the book. I tied so much into this brand, and there's so much that we're still building. But I just wanted to show people that even after a dream ends for you, that isn't the end. And a lot of people coming up, they think that they have to be an athlete to make an impact, and a lot of their goals and visions are based off of that. Like, all right, man, I'll play my time in the league, do my time in the league, and then I'll build my portfolio after. But you can still make a huge impact in this world, even if you never touch the field, even if you aren't successful, and even after you're done playing the game. And that's what I'm ultimately trying to show people. We got the clothing line, and it's so much we're getting into. A guy that I look up to and is a role model is Master P. I've seen what Master P is doing, man. Just no limit, man. There's no limit to what you can do. When you look at Master P every single time,
he's on like 25 years now. He's still doing it 25 years.
And he got the snacks. Every store you see a whole bunch of snacks and different things and Master P's name. He has a clothing line. Like, man, listen, y'all can say whatever you want about, oh, this is cheap, this and that, the third. He's not going to keep rolling it out if it ain't making money. To see him in all these different businesses, turn himself into a business mogul, that's absolute goal. So that's ultimately what we're trying to show people, that, all right, man, it didn't work out with athletics, but we still can do so much in this world. And yeah, a lot of my clothing has the motivational aspect to it, but it has a little fashion sense as well. And man, listen, I used to spend a lot of money in college on designing.
Oh yeah?
A lot of money. When I was in college.
So were you a t-shirt guy, like a jeans guy? Were you a shoes guy? Like, or were you like a hat, like accessory apparel guy? What was your like fashion indulgence of choice?
I used to have a lot of shoes. Like, I remember a lot of shoes. And then I was the guy, whenever we got our checks, they called me Gucci Freddy. Whenever we got our checks, I was in the Gucci store. Like, I remember when we went to the national championship, and I absolutely, it's a funny story, because I went one day with a group of guys, and I went in there and I was just checking out the store to make sure it had what I wanted. And then I went and walked around to other stores in there, and they were like treating me like crap, thinking I wasn't gonna spend money. Then I come right back in there, and I'm like, yo, I want this. And they're giving me wine, like champagne, like,
yeah.
So the next year when we come, and this was in California, the next year when we come to California, I was like, man, make sure Fred don't spend all his money in the Gucci store. So at this point,
give him the wrong store hours. Give him the wrong store hours. Oh no, it's closed. Sorry, Freddie, it closed.
But at this point, it was me. Like, man, these brands are already rich. Like, I've been able to build a platform for myself. I'm not. They're going to be rich regardless whether I buy or not. So at this point, I've been able to build a brand for myself. So why not push my products? Anytime I go around, you're going to see me in my gear, and I'm going to make sure that I'm a guy that prides himself on looking good. So people ask you where you got your outfit from. I'm like, all right, go on that trial105.com.
That's awesome. Freddie Stevenson here on Believe in Bears. His book is called Trials to Triumph. His clothing line is called Triumph105. You can check that out. Freddie, man, you know, we were just meeting for the first time, dude, but really great talking to you, dude. I'm so happy that we were able to connect. I'm so happy that you were able to come on this pod and tell our listeners your story. I really appreciate it, dude. If you can, real quick before you go, just tell the people, you know, Twitter handle, how to find Triumph105, how to, I'm sure the book is available anywhere. Just tell anyone how, you know, they can get their hands on some of your stuff right now.
Okay, without a doubt, my Twitter, Instagram is StruggleMate105. And for you guys that are going to listen to the story, if you're still wondering what the significance was, it goes back to the beginning of the story with the dollar and 5 cents with the cheeseburger. Yeah, StruggleMate105. The struggle has ultimately got us to this point, and it's got us through so much. So we're never going to forget that. We're going to keep that hunger, and that's my social media handle. So when you hear StruggleMate105, you hear Triumph105, that's the inspiration behind it.
Well, I hope when the listeners hear the word five too, they think that if they have the moment and they can maybe try and help others too as well. Because sometimes people have that dollar, but other people need help with that 5 cents, right?
And that gets lost in the story as well. Like the guy that was generous enough to give the nigga, shout out to him. I don't know. It may be something that I feel like a moment like that never leaves your mind. I'm sure he's had to lend people money before, but I'm sure after that situation, seeing a mother with five kids, that stuck with that guy. So if you ever hear that story, I just want to thank you. I want to thank you. And if I can ever get in touch with you, I would love to. I appreciate you for that moment. You just don't know how much it meant for a mother with five kids.
And you never know, whatever it is, the amount of generosity or whenever it is that you try and go out and you help people, that 5 cents created a catalyst that created a national title football player and also went on to the NFL. And now he's got his own clothing line. You know what I mean? It's like a nickel to this is, you know, always trying to remember that, everyone out there, for, you know, whenever you're thinking about lending a helping hand, even if it is small, you never know what happens after that. Man, Freddie, such a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for coming on the pod. Thank you so much for taking the time. We ran over a little long, man, but I was having a great time talking to you. Wishing you nothing but the best, man. I'd love to have you come back, dude. You know, anytime.
I don't know. I forgot to plug my book. It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
The book, it's available on all platforms, but Amazon is where most people are buying it. So feel free to get that. It's available on all platforms where books are sold, ebook, paperback. Feel free to buy that and make sure you leave a review for everybody out there that's wondering about the book. In fact, I had a lot of people get the book, but they're not leaving reviews. And I'm learning to do it because I'm a guy that I would buy, like go to a restaurant, and I wouldn't leave a review online, but now that I'm a business owner, I learned how much it truly matters. So make sure you leave a review.
I'm in the same boat, dude. People text me and they're like, hey man, great pod today. I'm like, just do the rating thing. Help us with the algorithm. We're not, you know what I mean? Help us with that math out there as best as you possibly can. Freddie, I got to tell you, I'm a fan. I'm a supporter of yours, dude. I'm wishing you nothing but the best moving forward in the future. And hopefully maybe you can come back on the pod down the road, maybe, and talk some football and talk more about your life.
Oh, definitely. Whenever you want to have me, listen, the season, I feel like it's going to be a crazy season. And although things didn't go well for me in Chicago, I'm forever indebted to Chicago because they gave me opportunity. And this trials and triumph doesn't happen without Chicago. So I'm a Bears fan for the rest of my life. And I appreciate them. And I'm always rooting for them. I got a lot of guys still there that I play with. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what they do this year.
Bear down and go Christian Jones, right? He's a glue guy, and don't think fans don't know that he's a glue guy, and we definitely missed him when he left the team. Today's episode of Believe in Bears was brought to you by betonline.ag. Make sure you go to the website because you get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's pretty awesome. Today's episode is also brought to you by Moink Box. If you want free bacon for the entire year, make sure you head to Moink Box and use the BLEAV promo code. You can get that for sure. Be well, be safe. Please be good to each other. We will talk soon, and we will talk next week.